Welcome to the show. This is another episode. I'm Bill Carnes. This is my co-host, Dave Champion, and together we are
totally unprepared.
And Dave, I am sitting here a little bit lighter weight than I was last week. I had a tooth yank yesterday, so I'm going to allow you to do as much talking as you want in this show, because I've got a little bit sore back there. I had a molar taken out, and it came out in about 15 minutes and 20 pieces, and I am beat up.
I have never heard anyone describe themselves as lighter for having had a tooth.
Well, hey, man.
You're going to go for everything you got, right?
Absolutely.
Now, I should probably tell the audience, we really did not do the high school girl thing. We did not call each other.
Oh, yeah, with the wrench.
are you wearing?
I'm sitting there. I'm waiting on Dave to show up to lunch, and he comes in, and I notice a red shirt, so I'm like, so what are you wearing?
We didn't do that.
It just worked out, but, you know.
So we probably should call each other to make sure this never happens again.
The color of passion.
That's right.
Very passionate show. We've got stuff to talk about, including some the Republican presidential field.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Here's my take so far.
Yep.
Now, Bill, you're heavily involved with the Republican Party. Me, I'm like, please, all of you people get away from me. Perry left the race.
Yep.
Walker left the race. I mean, these are two guys who've announced they left the race. And my view is Ben Carson has left the race, even though he doesn't know that yet. And that's because of his comment. You want to explain that?
Well, he was on Meet the Press this last week, and they were talking about, it ended up towards the end of the interview, talking about religion and elected officials. And they asked him, do you think a Muslim would make a good president? And he said, no.
Right.
And they said, what about a congressman? Well, I don't know. It all depends on their views and their policies.
Yes, that was the statement, yes.
Now, he's since come in there and requalified that by saying he doesn't think, and he touched on it a little bit about any religion or other religions if they were too far gone on their religion that they wouldn't respect the Constitution. He clarified that even more after obviously his advisors, yeah, came around. I was going to say his publicists, but yeah, after they came around.
Here's your damage control statement.
Yeah, the damage control was, well, if any candidate for any office is so far and above with religion that the Constitution comes below that, that they wouldn't be able to fulfill their duties, and none of them should be in any elected office.
Which had precious little to do with what he said on the show.
It was a bit of a stretch getting there. He tried to make a clarification, which took the scenic route to the clarification.
Now, let me explain to the audience why I think this is the death knell for Ben Carson as a candidate. Now, a lot of people in America have an issue with Islam since 9/11. Okay. I'm actually about to do a blog piece on DaveChampionsLiberty.com about how 9/11 has completely distorted, just whacked Americans out in their head. They've lost their freaking minds about Islam looking through the prism of 9/11.
Okay. Right. They're now the government-created boogeyman.
Yes. And it's like, well, let me ask you. Rather than give the audience my perspective, I'll ask you. How many times had you ever heard, been involved in or heard others discuss Islam before 9/11?
Actually, quite a bit, only because I have been astute about what has been going on around the world since I was a kid. And my real introduction to this was the Iranian hostage deal back in 1978, 79, 80.
Right.
So,
78, yeah.
Well, so, yeah, started in 78, went through all 79, 444 days later,
yes.
About a half hour after Reagan was sworn in, they were on their way to Germany. So, since then, and then of course you have the Iran-Iraq war not long after that.
Right.
And then not long after that, we have Gulf War I, and then we've been paying attention to that region heavily since then. Of course, you had all of the things with Yasser Arafat and everything.
You're talking about political events, which is not my question. I did not hear my fellow Americans, say, sitting in a restaurant with a couple of buddies and there's some margaritas on the table. I didn't hear Americans engaging in a conversation about Islam.
I would agree.
Up until 9/11.
I would agree.
Then Islam and the word Muslim was just falling out of people's mouths.
Well, sure.
Since
it's
9/11.
Been food spoon-fed to all of us 24/7 on the news cycle ever since.
Now, Ben Carson's statement, basically he said that he did not find Islam to be compatible with America's goals and philosophies. Which obviously is a highly bigoted statement. I mean, I know Muslims that would walk into this studio right now, stand here between Bill and I, and say, I love liberty equally as much as I love my faith, and I would never violate liberty for my faith. So it's a very bigoted point of view. But more importantly, and this is the reason I feel that Ben Carson is done before he starts. He just killed it. He just shot himself in the head politically. The Constitution has a provision that says there shall be no religious test to hold office in the United States. That means that you cannot say, you cannot be a president, or you cannot be a congressman, you cannot be Secretary of State, because you are Hindu or Buddhist or Christian or Muslim. And so Ben Carson, who, you know, and I find this a little bit ironic, because at the same time we've got people like Kim Davis, who are just these crazy whack job Christian extremist nutballs, trying to deprive a certain segment of society of exercising their fundamental constitutionally protected rights. We've got Ben Carson, who is very verbal out there about being a Christian, turning around and saying, "Oh well, that other religion, they'd be bad in American government."
I've got a different perspective. Ben Carson's Christian. He's talked about it before, but he is not a as I would say, nearly as hardcore as a lot of these. Look at Mike Huckabee.
Hell, he went no, to please, Kim no, Davis's I don't want to look side. At Mike Huckabee.
And there's a couple of others. His, and I don't believe that his campaign is done over this. And I'll tell you why. Far too many other Americans now, because of 9/11, because of the discussions of Islam and Muslims,
right,
identify with the statements that he made on Meet the Press.
Oh, I agree with you. I don't think he's done in a popular sense. Remember, people, these guys go nowhere without funding.
Right.
And to the tune of billions of dollars in a presidential race, I don't think he's going to find any money now. I think he killed that. Because the people who provide these billions of dollars, they're not your Kim Davises of the world. They are people who are more, obviously, if you're contributing billions of dollars, these are people who are more well-educated. These are people who... they got that money by looking at the world in a more pragmatic sense and not allowing emotions to run away with them. Okay, so they understand that a candidate who says, "Oh, I'm happy to violate that particular principle of the Constitution because I'm bigoted about Islam," I don't think they're going to say he's our boy. Let's pump a bunch of money at him.
I'm not so sure I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. The reason being, if it were the case of individuals who are sending money to presidential campaigns, which very few of them run off of that, most of them run off of bigger business sending all that money.
Right, and PACs.
Yeah, they go for a winner, and Ben Carson's still in the top three. So it's like if you are going to bet on the football game and you got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers playing against almost anybody else, you may have love for Tampa Bay. You may have love for the Dallas Cowboys, and Tampa Bay, say, is playing the, I don't know, Green Bay Packers. Tampa Bay is probably not going to win. Packers are going to smash them, and you might be a Dallas fan or you might be a Tampa Bay fan, but because there's money involved, you're going for the winner. You're going to put your money on Green Bay.
Okay.
Because it's business. You're buying influence in politics.
A friendly wager. A shot of good tequila. Because I know you're much more the aficionado than I am when it comes to tequila. A shot of good tequila. If Ben Carson is still in the top three next week, I'll buy. If he's not in the top three next week, you'll buy.
Okay. Deal.
All right, there we go.
All right.
See, we do this stuff all the time.
Anyway, I'm drinking tequila.
That's
who's
right.
The loser here?
How was this bad?
So we also had...
By the way, can I pimp DaveChampionsLiberty.com for a second?
I think you just did, but go ahead.
Well, I wanted to be...
Put that bitch out on the street
right.
And pimp it.
I wanted to pimp it a little more. thank you for helping out, Noah. You know, Bill and I, we like to have fun on the show. But if you want to see some of these topical current events and just general principles of liberty in a way that's not so much fooling around like Bill and I do. If you go to DaveChampionsLiberty.com and you subscribe, every time I post a video or an article, you'll get an email. But you're not going to get spammed. I don't sell the email list, anything like that. It's only to get the material. And I promise you this, like it or don't like it, you will not hear the perspectives that you get on DaveChampionsLiberty.com anywhere else. So if you want something intriguing that's a little bit different, go ahead and subscribe.
And you've also got your Periscope.
I do, although yeah. Because we live out here in the cell
Sticks.
Service is so edgy. Yeah. I haven't done a lot of those. If okay. I was in Vegas, you know, where there's incredible cell service, but I noticed what was happening when I was posting. They look all pixelated.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, one other thing, going back to the presidential campaign on the Republican side, who else is going to be dropping out? I got to tell you, Dennis Kucinich has got to go. Lindsey Graham got to go. I mean, these guys are literally bottom feeders when it comes to the polls. They're not even polling. There's some
ex-governor that's in the running. I can't even. I saw his name. I'm like, who is this guy?
Pataki, George Pataki of
New
York.
No.
He needs to go
too. There's another guy. You know, just the field is so cluttered right now.
It is.
And but I, we've got Cruz, okay. Where's he in the polls?
He's doing pretty well. He's middle or a little higher than middle.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then who's the other?
The Liberty people are tending to do pretty well.
Okay. And the guy who's got to go, and I normally, when I say it, I won't do it on the show because I don't want him to have to work. I change the H to an F. Mike Huckabee.
Yes.
He is a stain on the reputation of the Republican Party. I was at the gym, and between sets, they had the, fortunately, no sound. I do a set, get up, and I look, and his face, this is from the night of the debate the other day, his face is filling the screen, and I just looked at that, and I thought, the fact that the Republicans put him up there, that allow him on that stage to spew his disgusting rhetoric, is a stain. It is everything that's wrong with the Republican Party is manifested by him being a participant.
Yeah, I don't see Mike Huckabee going very far. But I am happy to see Carly Fiorina up in the top two or three.
She seems like she's got some pluck.
Yeah, and what I'm digging is the people that are not the career politicians that are making an impact. That's what I'm liking. And they're all very liberty-minded.
Yeah, and she might stick with it. I think Trump will bail in the end, but Fiorina might stay in.
Yeah. We'll be back in the next segment.
We are back, and it's time for what is up with extreme pettiness? Now, I'm going to give you an example from the public sector, but of course it applies, I'm sure you will agree, in private life, in that you wonder sometimes when you hear people talking and the things they say perhaps about you or others, you think, my God, people cannot be this petty. And I think one of the cases that I saw publicly that exemplified that for me was when I read an article yesterday that Mike Huckabee, who I have no words to express the disdain I feel for that man, decided to focus on three individuals that the White House had invited to greet the Pope. The Pope, as you probably well know, is on a tour through Cuba and now the United States. And Mike Huckabee was on a rant condemning the White House because the White House invited an Episcopal bishop who's gay, an activist nun. I have no idea what that means, an activist nun, but hardly the point. And lastly, somebody who is the former co-chair of something called Dignity USA, I have no idea what that is, who's transgender. And Huckabee is enraged and condemning the White House and Obama. And you know, and I think Obama is an absolute sphincter, but I think Huckabee is perhaps even a bigger sphincter. So you would think, based on Huckabee's rant, that maybe these are the three people who've been invited to meet the Pope? No. Actually, the White House has invited 15,000 people to meet the Pope. and Mike Huckabee decided to focus on three. The smallness, the pettiness is unbelievable. Now, here's my thinking. I think anybody can see the smallness of focusing on three people out of 15,000, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. I will share my perspective in that when the Pope comes to America, and it doesn't have to be the Pope, it just happens to be him. My philosophy would hold no matter who was coming to visit America. So any head of state or diplomat or dignitary or what have you. The Pope comes to visit America. When he goes to a place like the White House, he's going, I think it is completely appropriate for him to meet the real America. And in the real America, there happens to be a gay Episcopalian bishop. There happens to be something called an activist nun, and there happens to be some transgender dude that used to be the co-chair of Dignity USA. They are a part of America just like the other 14,997 people that are going to be there. But the sphincter Huckabee wants the Pope to be presented with Huckabee's America. And one of the things that concerns me about Huckabee and people like him and Huckabee's America is I'm a student of history. And one of the things that I noted, for instance, if we look at Nazi Germany, one of the things that preceded the horrible way that the Jews were treated in Germany leading up to and including World War II was their marginalization, that there was something bad about them, something wrong about them. They had to be kept out of view, kept silent, moved to specific neighborhoods. They could no longer own property. They had to surrender certain items of wealth, and on and on and on. They were marginalized before they were attacked. And I have absolutely no doubt that somebody like Mike Huckabee and others similar who have similar mindset to Huckabee would, if our civil laws in America did not prevent it, they would engage in the same conduct towards homosexuals as the Nazis did towards the Jews in World War II. You may disagree with me. I have no doubt in my mind that would happen. Because why? Because they have the authority of God Almighty. So when they murder somebody, it's just and righteous. So I look at this pettiness issue and I have to wonder, as I often do during my rant, how does this serve America? We're supposed to be engaged in this, what has been phrased, the great experiment concerning liberty, living freely. And the dynamic has all too often been focused on, well, the government can't do this and the government can't do that, which I agree. But the government is a very small constituent part of the nation. There's several million government employees. There's 325 million of us. Okay? So we say, government, you can't do this, or government, you can't do that. How does it serve this great experiment of liberty? How does it serve us in this principle of self-governance when we turn around to each other in society and we are petty and hateful and we demean people? And as I said, I feel confident that the people, the ilk of people like Huckabee, would engage in far worse conduct if the civil law allowed it. How does that serve our great experiment of liberty? Well, personally, I think it's an epic fail. Bill, your thoughts?
Dave, it seems all too common that people will speak about things like liberty, such as Mike Huckabee in this case, but yet he will take a section of liberty and carve it out for his special interest, for what he believes is the right way to go. And other people who would spout about liberty that agree with him would say, no, no, that's okay because I agree with him. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't agree with him, you'd spout problems with liberty. All the while, if you do agree with him, there's no problem with liberty because I agree with the guy.
Yeah, liberty is good now.
Yeah, and yeah. We all have to realize that Mike Huckabee's picking on three people of all of these folks that Obama has invited to meet Pope Francis because he's a presidential campaign and he wants to get his word out there. Now, he's taking the hard Christian right approach.
He is the hard Christian right.
So he's not going to get elected.
He's the poster child for the hard Christian right.
Bernie Sanders could beat him if he sticks with the hard Christian right approach, which that's Mike Huckabee. I met Mike Huckabee about 5 months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I did. I was at a political event, and I was presenting one of my custom-built guitars to the chairman of the Nevada Republican Party, a guy by the name of Michael McDonald, not the same guy that was with the Doobie Brothers. Different guy, same name. And a good friend of mine. And Mike Huckabee was a keynote speaker, so it turns out he plays guitar and mostly bass. So he was up on stage, got all the pictures. He's a nice enough guy. But he does take the hard Christian right, which there's not enough people in this country that will agree with that approach. Almost to the point where when Ben Carson was talking about somebody that is far too stuck to their religion to allow that to overpower the Constitution itself.
That is my
they would be that would be a difficult match to have. Then, yeah, we're basically talking about Mike Huckabee Christianity when it comes to that.
You know, you and I have talked often about the 14th Amendment, and we understand its roots, its foundations, what its true intention was, and I think we've even talked on the show, touched upon at least how the modern Supreme Court is trying to push it in one direction without actually coming out and saying that they're doing that, because clearly most educated people know the real intention. And Mike Huckabee, in an interview of a couple weeks ago, and this goes to, I think, some of the insanity of that ilk, and their bigotry. He said that Dred Scott, right, means that black people cannot actually be citizens. He seemed, and I watched the interview, and he seemed completely unaware. His interpretation of Dred Scott is correct. Right up until the ratification of the 14th Amendment, ratification of the 14th Amendment was the cure for Dred. Okay? And he seemed completely unaware of that. He just simply said, because of Dred, black people cannot really be citizens. It was like, and you're running for president.
And this is a guy that has grown up, lived, and been elected to public office in what is the former Confederate States. Governor of Arkansas.
Yeah.
And he now lives in Florida. I mean, we're talking about the area of Confederacy.
Yep.
So interesting enough.
You know, and it's funny because we've got Kim Davis, who's down there in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. We've got that other county clerk that said that he would not issue same-sex marriage licenses, and that Casey was his last name.
In Casey County.
In Casey County, Kentucky. We've got Huckabee down there. And these are just the ones that I can remember sitting here now. But the other
day, part of the Bible Belt.
Well, the other right? day I commented, I mean, they seem to really be working triple overtime to reinforce that's the most stupid, bigoted part of America. And to me, if I live down in the South, and I have some friends that didn't, they saw my post about that. They're like, dude, we're not all like that. I'm like, I know. But if I lived down South, I would be doing everything I could to say, let's stop saying and doing stuff that shows that we're the most ignorant, bigoted part of the entire country. Let's maybe turn that around and become, I don't mean progressive in the leftist sense. I mean that in the simply moving forward sense. Let's go from being the most recalcitrant, status quo, old school, bigoted nonsense. Let's be progressive. Let's launch ourselves into the 21st century and break this paradigm. And they're not. They're going backwards like the Stone Age.
I would agree. And it doesn't help liberty as a movement, as a cause, as basically a revolution. And I am all about liberty. There are certain, I guess, prejudices that I have, the way that people operate. I'm not talking prejudices like color your skin or your religion or anything, but the way people operate and the way they do things, and things that I don't like. But just because I don't like them doesn't mean they shouldn't be allowed. It is liberty. For instance, I don't like the idea of homeowners associations and the CC&Rs and all this garbage. You know what? If I buy that piece of property, I'll walk out back and take a leak on it if I want to. It's mine. If I want to build a shed on it to hold my garden tools, I'm going to do it, and I don't need your permission.
Right.
If I'm going to put grass and some other things in a landscape, I'm not going to go by your rules that I can't do that. That's liberty. And I realize, you know, I don't want to live in a nice neighborhood and somebody else
has a rat hole that's a rat pack, as long as it's not dangerous, that's when it becomes a problem. But if it's just ugly and crappy and they don't paint their house, you know what? That's theirs to do with it. Right. I don't like it. It's not for me. I wouldn't do it. I would be down on my kids or friends if it was their house. But at the same point, they can do it. And that's liberty.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if somebody wants to have the Addams Family home next to you, I mean, hey, it's not a feeling.
Hey, you know what? Or what was it? Grandpa that drove the Dracula and the Monsters.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. A buddy of mine, my partner in the guitar business and Gunslinger Guitars, Jason, he actually custom designed a Jackson guitar out of the Jackson Custom Shop 25 years ago that had the Dracula on it. It was gorgeous.
Very cool. Yeah. And my thing is, by the way, if they get to be a problem, that's what nuisance laws are for. Yes.
True.
Yeah. Right, we'll be back right after these words.
Welcome back, and now it's time for my rant. You know what really grinds my gears? Government and its inefficiency. I live in a county, Nye County, Nevada. It's the third largest county by landmass in the entire United States. 8,300 square miles. You could put a large portion of New England in this county. I can drive from one end of the county to another end of the county, and it'd take me nearly 5.5 or 6 hours in the car at highway speeds. It's a big county. More than 97% of this county, the land, is controlled by one federal government agency or another. It's ridiculous. Now, we keep the Nevada test site, now referred to as the Nevada, National Security Site, I believe it's called. Yucca Mountain is there. Area 51 is part of this, the Groom Lake Aircraft Testing Facility. We've got Forestry Division, BLM controls a lot of the land. We end up with government that's here. It's not a big county. There's about 45,000-46,000 people in this county. About 38 or 39,000 of them are in the town I live in, of Pahrump. The rest are scattered about Tonopah, Gabs, Round Mountain. There's a few others. And we still have inefficient government. Now, I don't so much blame the people that are in government now for the problem, because it's been coming and coming. Even at the state level, we just had the largest tax increase in the history of Nevada passed. The last one was just 12 years ago, the largest at the time. Why do we continue to grow government? Well, because government looks out for government. It's people dealing with people. They want to have more control and bring their buddies and their cronies along. Crony capitalism, if you will, when it comes to the money side of things. There's actually movement in Pahrump now of a bunch of people that used to be involved with the town. Now, keep in mind, in Pahrump, we actually voted a layer of government out of existence. You can have a township, you can have a town, you can have a city. Township has no government overrun. If you have a town, you've actually got a town board. They have a town manager, they have staff, and they run things. That was the middle of the road. That's what we used to have. Then you have an incorporated city, city council, mayor, all that good stuff. Pahrump went from a town to a township, if you will. We dropped that layer of government. Now, a lot of the people that were involved in that layer of government who were pushing for incorporation before are now looking to push for incorporation again to look out for themselves. Now, big problem with that. On top of that, we need to get rid of layers of government. When Dave and I walked into the studio today, it was a perfect example, and I've used it many times. In the studio, there are dozens of fire extinguishers in this complex, because they have to be. And every 2 years, you have to have those things recertified. You call a private company that's gone through the process to be certified by the state. They're overseen by an inspector general, if you will, within that realm. And these private companies will come out and they will service and certify your fire extinguishers. Now, if you own a restaurant and say you need to put in a new hood with a fire suppression system, you can't call that same company or one like it. You've got to wait for a government employee who's an inspector out of health inspection or fire inspection or whatever it is in your county to come out and inspect that. And if there's any problem, even if you can fix it in 30 minutes with a quick trip down to the hardware store and back, it still might take them a week or 10 days to come back and reinspect. If that was a private company that had gone through the training and the same certification and authorization as the government employee, you just call Mike's inspection down the street and have Mike come on out or send one of his reps out to look at it. If they can't get to it, you call the next guy or gal down the street and you have them come out. The DMV, what a nightmare. They don't provide enough employees for that. Then again, their procedures are long and drawn out. In many smaller communities in this area of southern Nevada where I live, Pahrump, Tonopah, Mesquite, Laughlin, you can only book doing the actual road driving test for a new license up to 2 months out. They're all booked up. Can't do it. You got to go to the big city. You got to go to Henderson or Las Vegas to do the driver's test. And then those are only 4 to 5 weeks out. If you want to get a CDL, a commercial driver's license, or a motorcycle license, there are many companies that have gone through and been certified by the state to provide the training, the testing, and the road testing for commercial driver's licenses and for motorcycles. You go to a private company, you pay them their money, you go through their course, do all the certification, they give you a concise sheet of paper, you take that to DMV and it's done. DMV is out of the loop. Why is it that the rest of us, the vast majority of us, have to feel the pain of using the DMV itself because there's no other option, there's no private industry which is more efficient, and then we just take our paperwork in? Why is that? We need to fix these things. For basically every inspection that the state or county government provides, there should be a private industry answer to be able to have the opportunity to call private industry, have them come out. Then that industry is regulated by an inspector general in his office. They get out of the way. They're not actually doing the job. It's a private industry that's doing the job, and the government and the rest of the industry watches each other. That's what we need to have to get government out of our life. To also have more people employed and in industries that are doing a good job. Now, the left might argue that, well, you're going to do away with all of these state and county employees? How dare you? No, I don't say that we get rid of them at all. If they've been doing the job and they've been doing it well, who better to go to work for one of these private companies, or even better than that, start their own company in their field? Get a loan, start a company, and since they are experts for having done it, if they've done it so well, they should be able to provide a lot of the answers. Dave, we're talking about limiting government and expanding private enterprise. Less taxes, less regulation, and more accomplishment. Am I off base here?
No. And I have three quick comments as I listen to you speak. Number one, there's already a model for the DMV one. It's called AAA.
If you go to AAA in Las Vegas and you're a member, there are three different locations you can go to get your license renewed.
Right, and you don't have to go to in California, it's almost full-featured DMV at the AAA if you're a member. So there's already a model for privatization.
Yes.
So you're spot on.
And there's legislation already there for the commercial and the motorcycle licenses.
Right.
Why not expand?
Absolutely. The inspections. You're absolutely right. I've got some friends of mine who own a restaurant in town. They waited an inordinate amount of time for several inspections to take place to get their business open. And of course, any of you who had your own business, you understand when you get your money on the table, you need to recoup that. Okay. I put the money out. Now, you know, that's predicated on getting money back in. We all know how that cycle works.
Unless, and the employees that aren't working there during this time as well.
Right. Unless you're independently wealthy, when money goes out, you have to turn it around and use that to generate income. Okay. And then you recycle the capital, and that's how the process works. So when you put money out and then you sit and you wait weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks for the government to come out and provide an inspection, and you can't pull the trigger on moving forward until then, that is at a minimum wrong. And my last observation is, in addition to the privatization, we need to have some sort of accountability for what happens after the inspection. I'll give you an example. The same family that I'm talking about that owns a restaurant here in town, they paid their I don't want to get them in trouble by saying I'm talking about them. They paid their fee to the state for the license they were seeking. How's that? I'm not going to say what type of license it was because that might irritate somebody in the state government and make it even harder for them. They paid the fee. They submitted their background documents. And the inspection took place. Not timely, but it eventually did take place. The decision then for what they need goes to Carson City, even though they're located right here in town.
The state capital.
Correct. And it has now been months. And they finally got a hold of an attorney, and the attorney sent a letter up to Carson City and said, what's going on? Representative from that agency called the attorney and said, we've got their package. And the attorney said, and? Well, we've got the package. And he said, is there anything wrong with it that's causing this delay? No. Was there any problems with the backgrounds? No. The check cleared? Yes. All the fields were filled in on the application. You're not missing anything? No, everything was done right. The inspection was done like 9 weeks ago. What are you doing? Oh, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
No accountability.
Zero.
You and I cannot walk into a government office and demand answers.
And this
we cannot do it.
And this is probably reducing that business's income by 40%.
Right. So if it were private and they called a company down the street to take care of this and go through this whole deal, would have been handled then.
Right.
And
right.
Now you let the state or whatever government office know, this has been handled. We did this through our own due process. And when we're talking about, you said you wanted to talk about after, say, the certificate has been given or the authorization has been provided. That's an industry thing with insurance. Somebody says, okay, this hood for this, the fire suppression for this hood in this kitchen for this restaurant is certified. And if something goes wrong because a certification was otherwise not up to par, well, now they risk being fined or even losing their license or something along that line. On top of that, they should have to have some sort of insurance coverage that what they're doing is right because if their inspectors
screws up. You're talking about the private inspectors.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, also, I think I like the idea of privatization. Don't get me wrong, but I think there needs to be some strong bracketing. And what I mean by that is whenever you turn something like this over to the private sector, there's the possibility I'll sign this off when I get that envelope.
Right.
Okay. The person doesn't do any of the required work, but the inspector got the envelope. So, and it can happen in the public sector too, but in the private sector, I think it would be a lot harder to discern because you can't get at their records as readily. So my thing is their records have to be totally open and available for state compliance officers to inspect the records. Mm-hmm. And if they are found to have done that, it's a felony. Off to prison you go.
Right.
Because there has to be ironclad accountability because that's what's missing in the public sector.
And one of the things that we have, we'll go back to the fire extinguishers. These guys, these fire extinguisher companies, any fireman, any fire marshal can mm-hmm. come in here and take a look at the tag and take a look at it and inspect it.
Yep.
So if they're doing well, you're going to know. And they want to police each other because you don't want to be the righteous guy in an industry doing inspections. And there's a guy up the road that's kind of a scumbag about it. And he's dragging your industry down.
Right. And why, of course, do we put fire extinguishers in our businesses? For the same exact reasons that we carry firearms on our hip.
That's right. In case there's a fire.
That's right.
That's right.
And we'll be back right after these words.
We're back on.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Totally unprepared for the camera to come back on. Segment four, where we take in your viewer emails. We love getting these things. Send them in. Our email address is right here at the bottom of the screen. It is at the bottom of the screen, DaveandBillShow@gmail.com. Send us topics or news stories or queries that you may have to us. We'll overlook them at lunch, but just before the show.
We'll overlook them?
Oh, yeah. We'll look them over. Oftentimes, we do overlook them.
That's right. I thought it was great that our engineer is also totally unprepared.
Yeah, he was. It's all working out. Yeah. And then if you want to see any of our old shows or just listen to them on audio through an RSS feed or the MP3 files, go to totallyunprepared.info.
Hey, Noah, we're a team.
Yeah. We're going to have you wearing a red shirt next
week.
We're
all totally unprepared. All right.
So with that having been handled, we want to talk about cops and body cams where police unions are now coming up with an excuse why they don't want them.
Okay.
Yeah, and all it is it's a different angle to try to not have their cops getting fired.
Recasting the issue?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. This is very near and dear to my heart, as I know it is to Bill's, because we're both huge advocates. We both believe that every single officer who's out in the field who has anything to do with the public should have a body cam on 110% of the time, right?
Maybe do those inspectors with body cams.
Yeah. So when the national debate about body cams started, the police unions who exist to protect the police officers or deputies or agents, depending about the agency, it pretty much went like this. Very few were for the body cams. A large percentage were silent about the body cams. And another large percentage were totally against the body cams. Now, of course, the ones that got the media were the ones that were against the body cam. And I understand why, because something doesn't smell right. So that's immediately going to attract, like sharks to blood. It's going to attack the media to the story. And of course, the message that the quite appropriate message that all of America got from unions saying they didn't want body cams was that they know what's going to come of that, and it's not going to vindicate the officer, it's going to vindicate the citizen, or at least in all too many cases to suit the union.
Right.
Okay. The union's job is to protect police officers. Now, a union official would sit here and say, oh, that's not, we just want a level playing field. That's bullshit. Okay, that's not true. What police unions want to do, the bulk of them, is they want to make sure, their job is to make sure that no officer ever goes down for anything. Every officer gets some little minor discipline. If he really seriously did something wrong, he gets some little minor discipline, he goes back to the job.
And why is that? Because they get money for the dues.
Yeah.
That's why.
Right, right. Every working officer is more money for them. And it builds, and you've seen this yourself firsthand, as have I, once an officer, especially if they were in the wrong, and they've been rescued by the union, what does that do to their loyalty?
Oh, it really solidifies.
Yeah, it's not loyalty to the department anymore. Really, it becomes loyalty to the union. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's really a disgusting phenomenon that goes on. One of the most revolting parts of the law enforcement industry. So the police unions got smart. They're like, wait a second, whoa. If we just say no body cams. We're sending a pretty clear message that we're concerned that it's going to show the truth about the conduct of our officers.
Yeah. So now what they want to do is create a reason why they don't want to. Okay, we don't want to have body cams. Why? What can we think up? So this is what they came up with.
They will be used in a very petty manner by supervisory staff. An example might be, Bill's my sergeant. Okay, or Bill, and yeah, Bill's my sergeant. And I walk up to Bill and I say, hey, Sarge, are you aware that officer over there just thinks you're a walking piece of garbage? And of course, Bill says, no, I'm not aware. Why is that? Well, it's all on my body cam. We just had a conversation in the car. Now, according to the new line being put out, the new line of hooey being put out by the unions, Bill now is then going to requisition the footage from my body cam as soon as it gets uploaded after my shift. He's going to then take it to the captain and say, well, look at how this other officer is talking about me. We need to discipline him and teach him he can't talk about his supervisory staff and these kind of terms. And it's going to be used for this petty backbiting type of phenomenon.
Which the interesting thing about it is that's exactly why unions exist now. Now, not originally, but now, is to stop that kind of stuff. So you would think that unions would be for this so that they could even intervene even more. Because what they could do, Dave, is they could write it into the next contract that you can't do this. Or the legislators that they own or pay off or what is the word? Donate.
Contribute.
Donate that they contribute to. Thank you. That those guys would actually pass some sort of a legislation around that.
Yeah, which would set the boundaries, the perimeters, of when these here's my thing on the body cams, because I certainly appreciate if an individual officer had that concern, I could understand that. But it's very simple, that it's used based on a citizen's complaint, and if it's used internally, there has to be very strict boundaries on that. It's not a hard it's not a hard thing to tackle. And the unions, with the power they have and the money they have, because most great legislation that concerning cops gets killed at the state legislature here in Nevada or anywhere else by the power of the police unions. Okay, so if they wanted to restrict that.
And you know what? It's not like reinventing the wheel, because there are departments that use body cams. What are their policies?
Right, right.
It's not starting from scratch here.
No.
So enough said about that. Here's another interesting one. Remington, who builds guns and ammo.
Yeah.
They've been doing so since 1813, I think it is.
You know, they're the only
over 200 years.
They're the only company in America that manufactures firearms and ammunition.
Yeah.
The only one?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was surprised to learn that.
Well, you have Winchester that makes guns, they make ammo, but there must be some different subsidiary or another. Because you can buy Winchester ammo, you can buy a Winchester rifle still. But anyhow, so not only has Remington been around forever, they've been in upstate New York. As a matter of fact, their newest facility in New York is 8 years old. And 2007, Senator Chuck Schumer went up there for the big unveiling because of all the jobs and all the money and everything such as that. He hates guns, but he went to visit Remington hoping to get a check. And I bet he got one. But New York has gotten so additionally anti-gun.
They've lost their minds.
They really have.
Yeah.
So now Remington has decided they're leaving New York and they're moving to Alabama, who's welcoming them with open arms, and their $87 million initial investment.
Yeah. So, and Alabama is not bathing in money. It's not a big money state. So when a company like Remington says we're going there, that's not like I'm going to California, right?
That's huge.
It's an entirely different equation, and you know, my hat's off to Alabama. The part that makes me nuts about this is the politicians. I don't know if you read this part. The politicians have wrapped this issue with Remington up with, what were the two? Abortion and gay rights.
Right.
It's like firearms, abortion, and gay rights. It's like, how do you wrap these three into?
Well, it's the governor of New York is a Democrat. Was it Pataki?
Cuomo?
No, Cuomo's the former, whoever it is.
Yeah, I don't know who it is.
This jackass said, well, if you want to have the pro-life, actually called him pro-life, didn't call him anti-abortion, pro-life, pro-gun, and what was the third one that they attacked?
What was it?
We just talked
now,
about
it. Yeah, I know. I'm having a senior moment. Yeah.
If they want to go down to Alabama, let them have them because there's no room. Anti-gay. There's no room for them in New York. So let them go.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a bunch of jackasses. I got to tell you, I am pro-gun. But that doesn't mean that I'm necessarily on one side of the issue of anything else. Just because you're pro-gun doesn't mean you also have the same position on abortion as everybody else, or you have the same position on religion, or the same position on same-sex relationships, or the same position on, you know, what color I should have in my carpet when I put it down in my family room.
Here's one for you. A gal that used to work for me in the anti-gang unit, she was the only female.
The anti-gay unit?
Yes. No, the anti-gang unit. The only female I ever brought on board. She was so squared away. And she was a lesbian. And we still know each other, whatever this is, 25 years after the fact. And I just received a letter from her in the mail. I mean, a little Facebook stuff, but I haven't received a real personal communication from her in years. And I just received a letter from her the other day speaking on behalf of the LGBT community and thanking me for my outspokenness in defense of, as she phrased it, that liberty is for all Americans, okay? Not gay rights. The liberty is for all Americans. And she said, we in the LGBT community are just so thankful that there's somebody like you who says that we should enjoy all of the fruits of liberty just like everybody else. And yet I'm hellaciously pro-gun. So where does, whoever this was, Pataki, Cuomo, where do they get this nonsense? This nonsense stuff.
It just fits into their mantra. They're trying to say everything that the people that support them hate, and it's got to be all of these same people. So it's not just the guns and the jobs leaving, if that doesn't bother you. But they don't like gay people, and they're anti-abortion, so let them go. So tack on all this other stuff you should hate them for, because that's what it is. It's literally grade school mantra.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is, I didn't know, like, if Remington had an opening in the procurement department where they go out and they purchase materials. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that on the application you had to check whether you were pro-life or, you know, pro-abortion, anti-abortion, whether you're pro-gay, anti-gay, you know. So when they talk that way, it's like,
as a matter of fact, they can't ask you those things.
I wonder how many New Yorkers that work there that fully respect equal rights for everyone and that
may have whatever their view is on abortion. I wonder how many of those people now are unemployed, and this, as you call it, this jackass is running his mouth.
Well, keep this in mind. They've offered for virtually all their employees to move down with them, and a lot of them are. But also keep this in mind. They've been in business for 200 years.
Talk about culture shock.
Yeah, no kidding. But you're talking rural northern New York, so it'd be
they still pride themselves on being a little bit more astute than the Bible Belt.
You also have to realize this. You have generations. No, you have to realize there's multiple generation employees there. You know, their dad, their granddad,
yes.
their great-granddad, their great-great-granddad might have all worked for Remington because they've always been in the same upstate New York community building more factories all along the line.
It's almost like how the Irish used to be in law enforcement for generations on the East Coast in particular.
It's an institution.
Yeah.
It's an institution. It would almost be like if we had the surfboard manufacturer leave California and go to Missouri.
Yes.
You've been in California because that's where the ocean is. That's where it started.
I didn't read the part about relocation.
Remington was quite,
that's funny.
Remington was quite literally just post-colonial.
In a sense, yes. Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You never know. They might have even known some of the founders.
Yes,
I'm sure
they did.
With that being said, we'll be back next week.
Take care. Thanks.